I understand that Attorney Chintamaneni, you and Attorney Markowitz are in the same office. Is he going to be seen in the first part of the argument or just at the rebuttal?
He is with me, Justice Rogan-Zack, and he will be seen just in the rebuttal, but he is physically present.
Okay, all right. Well, just so he can see what we're going to do here time-wise, and that's the reason that I asked, I'm going to have my marshal show you how we keep track of time. Good morning, Attorney Markowitz. Good. When it's time for you to begin argument, either attorneys or any of the three, you'll see a green start sign. When you have 5 minutes yet to go, you'll see a yellow 5 minute sign. And when it's time to conclude your argument, you will see a red stop sign. I will try to help you keep track of that last red stop sign because I know it's a lot harder to have to keep looking up in the corner of your screen when you're thinking about your argument than it would be if you were standing before us and you have a little light that would flash on in front of you. I will always let you answer a pending question from a justice. But after that, I'll probably haul you in and conclude your argument after the red stop sign goes on. Now, before we begin today, we do have a school group that is watching us virtually. We have an ongoing program called Court with Class, and usually they're right here in the courtroom where I am sitting today, and I always ask them to stand up so we can recognize them. Well, they're all appearing virtually, so maybe they can stand up in their school. We are going to have, oh boy, I hope I say it right, Maranatha Baptist Academy. That's who's watching the proceedings today. So we are very happy to have you with us, and Justice Brian Hagedorn will speak with you after the oral arguments and answer some of your questions, also, of course, again, by Zoom. So with those preliminary matters out of the way, I will call our case this morning, Southport Commons versus DOT. Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, I am.
Please begin.
Thank you, Justice Rogan-Zack. May it please the court. I am Attorney Smith Chintamaneni, and I appear today along with attorneys Alan Markowitz and Adam Bazelon. I'd like to thank also my partner, Andrea Roschke, for efforts in the briefing today. I've learned from Attorney Markowitz that it is customary to advise the court that this is my first argument in front of this court. So I thank the justices for this opportunity. I can't say the same for Attorney Markowitz, as many of you know.
And who know him.
He will argue for 5 minutes in the rebuttal, which I'll reserve thank 5 minutes for him. Today, Southport asks this court to interpret Wisconsin statute 88.87 2C's requirement that a property owner who has been damaged by a governmental entity's construction of a highway or railroad grade file a claim within 3 years after the alleged damage occurred. Southport's appeal today centers on the meaning of the word occurred. The facts pled in this case indicate the damage was first discovered in 2016. Going back to 2009, DOT relocated a road to bisect Southport's vacant property. Southport did not become aware of these damages in the form of wetlands that were created by the highway construction until 2016. Southport filed its claim in March of 2017 under 88.87, and then filed suit here. Circuit Court granted DOT's motion for judgment on the pleadings, which was later affirmed by the Court of Appeals.
Counsel, I wanted to, before we get to the statutory interpretation piece, I wanted to sort of sort through the procedural nature of the case and kind of our review under it. So this is a judgment on the pleadings that was granted here. And so I think what we're supposed to do is look to what was actually pled and argued below. And so the question I have for you is, I know there was some argument in your brief about, we didn't get the opportunity to develop facts on this. But I think the real question is, did you plead it or argue based upon your pleadings that you pled it? So Is there any part of your pleadings and or any part of your arguments in the trial court hearing or in your trial court briefing where you claim that the wetlands developed within the 3-year time frame?
No, Justice Hagedorn. And the reason we cannot claim that, we did not claim that, is because we filed a notice of claim in March of 2017, and we would have undertaken the evidentiary steps with, through expert reports filed with the circuit court to advise the court when the claim, when the wetlands first became created. And with the judgment on the pleadings, the circuit court, obviously, as this court knows, takes the facts pled in the complaint as correct. And we submit that the only, there is no record which states out by facts via affidavit or findings of fact by the circuit court when the damage actually occurred here. And other than one sentence in the trial court transcript, where the circuit court assumed the damage occurred at, in 2009 upon DOT's completion of the project, there are no other facts in the record at this time because we were not provided opportunity to develop them.
Well, the difficulty I have with that, and maybe you can help me out here, is this is just simply based on the pleadings, and so you don't need to develop facts. So all you had to do was allege that this damage occurred within the 3-year time frame. You didn't need to prove it for motion for purposes of the pleading. That obviously does come later. So we don't have any trial court factual findings here. What we have are, and I know the circuit court mentioned, or the court of appeals mentioned this trial court's finding, but on a motion for judgment on the pleadings, you don't have a circuit court finding. So if you didn't plead it, how are we supposed to deal with that? And again, reading your arguments below, I didn't see it. You argue that these damages developed later. And so in terms of putting aside the statutory interpretation piece for a moment, assume that the Court of Appeals got the statute correct. I'm trying to figure out how you get past that issue then.
Sure. Well, I think that your question, Justice Hagedorn, goes to the heart of the issues in this case, which is the wetlands that were created here. Unlike most situations where there is a specific point in time where one can determine or attempt to determine or suspect that they have been damaged, wetlands, by their very nature, as we stated in our briefs, are slow and invidious, and it's not something that occurs within a finite period of time, whether that be 2 months or 3 months. It's over time, and so that is why it was not until 16 that our client was able to first say, let's do a wetlands delineation to determine that they were now in existence.
I understand that you didn't discover it until 2016, but for purposes of a judgment on the pleadings, didn't you need to at least plead or argue based upon inferences from the pleadings that the damages occurred within the 3-year time frame?
And Justice Hagedorn, and that's where we relied on the Prum decision for our understanding that 88.87's occurrence includes occurrence and discovery by the property owner of the damage.
So for purposes of our argument here, can we assume that you didn't plead that then? I mean, I didn't see it, but are you at least acknowledging that you did not plead the damages occurred within 3 years of the 3 years here?
We did not say it occurred within 3 years, Justice.
Thank you.
Okay, I look at your pleadings, and paragraph 17 is the only definitive paragraph I find where you basically allege that the damages were caused by the construction that occurred concluding in 2009, correct?
Correct.
And when you argued to the circuit court, this same question that Justice Hagedorn is raising came up, and as I read the appendix, it was explained to the circuit court that damages can be fleshed out by discovery and the process of determining exactly when this damage occurred and when they should value that damage. So you did point out to the circuit court that you didn't know when the damages occurred. Correct?
Correct, Justice Rogenczak. And that leads me to my point that under 88.87, if there is a claim that is deemed to be timely, the damages will be set under 3210 inverse condemnation statute, and we will have to establish through 3210 when the damages occurred to trigger the just compensation that we're entitled to as a property owner under 3210.
So you don't think that the claim you made, you were required to say when the damages occurred in order to survive a motion to dismiss based on the pleadings?
Under the Prum case, Justice Rogensack, that is correct. Prum case specifically stated on three separate occasions that we that the property owner, that the claim runs from the time the property owner first discovers the damage.
Well, in Prune, we didn't know when the culvert was created. So you really couldn't go back to, and the allegation was that it was a faulty construction of the culvert, and that's why it washed out. But there's nothing in the case that I could find that said when that culvert was created, right?
Correct. The damage occurred, and that's what made the property owner become aware of the water infiltration and then file a claim shortly thereafter.
So you see your case as similar to Prune because the kind of damages you had weren't apparent at the moment the construction was completed.
Correct. Wetlands, by their nature, would not appear overnight the moment that the governmental entity completes their project here.
Okay. And you're asking for inverse condemnation?
We're asking for the right to proceed under 3210 in circuit court. Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So it appears to me in that you didn't care, and I don't mean this disparagingly, your focus was not on when the damage occurred. Therefore, you didn't plead when the damage occurred because your whole approach was when it was discovered. So when it occurred isn't all that important to you. When it discovered is the linchpin of your pleadings and also your argument in the circuit court. Is that correct?
That's correct, Justice Bradley. We have viewed 88.87 as a notice of claim statute, not necessarily a statute of repose per se. And so we determined under the plain language of 88.87 and other cases interpreting it as a notice of claim statute, as well as the Pruem case, that discovery would start a property owner's obligation to file a claim within the three-year period, consistent with the purpose of 88.87's right to a property owner's ability to file a claim.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. There is nothing in the text of the statute that references discovery, as some statutes do reference, you know, when it occurred or when it was discovered. So you're really not relying on the text as much as the Prum case.
That's correct, Your Honor. We're relying on the Prum case as well as comparing 88.87 to other similar statutes such as 3218, which I've talked about in our briefs as well, and the general purpose of 88.87, which is to allow the property owners an ability to file a claim and allow a government entity the ability to either fix it, pay for it and acquire the property, or deny the claim. We also have to appreciate that 88.87-2C has a specific notice of claim process. It's not just filing a claim. The claim has to be a sworn statement, which consists of the damages and the property that's been damaged and describe the damage. So on its, by logic, one cannot file a claim within 3 years without first ascertaining what the damage is that they've incurred.
Counsel, is there a way to still give meaning to the word occurred and not the word discovered, which does not appear in the statute, and still allow for something like wetlands to be claimed as damage? For example, having to prove when it occurred, as long as it occurred within the 3 years, that's still a possibility, right? I mean, the way you set it up is kind of, if we don't say it's discovered, then you can never address something like wetlands. Well, you still could, as long as you have an ability to prove that the occurrence began, even perhaps, I don't know, but occurred during that 3-year period. Isn't that still a framework that would be more true to the statutory language?
I agree, Justice Dallet, and that's what is contemplated. If you look at 88.87 notice of claim in conjunction with 3210 inverse condemnation, which requires a property owner to prove when the damage occurred to set a date for the taking.
Right, but that wouldn't mean that we would then reread the statute to say discovered. You would still have an obligation to prove that it occurred within the 3 years, not necessarily when it was discovered years later.
Well,
are you catching what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. But you come across the notice of claim provisions, a sworn statement, within has to be made within the 3-year period. So, for example, if a property owner discovers, in this case, like they did, 6 years after the fact or 7 years after the fact and files a sworn statement, that sworn statement is not within that 3-year period. And so,
right. So maybe the property owners have a potential incentive to, for things like wetlands, they've got this 3-year framework that they understand that they're working within for purposes of filing a claim, that maybe that cabins them into that framework. I mean, the legislature seemed to cabin them within a time frame, right? The way you're reading it really expands it into eternity.
Not necessarily. I'm not sure if eternity is the right standard we're looking for.
And okay, maybe not eternity, but
only an hour.
No, the reason I chuckle at that is not because we're not asking this court to say that, you know, notice of claim can be filed 50 years after a road project is completed. I mean, there has to be, for a property owner to file a suit, they have to believe they've been damaged. They have to believe they have the ability to prove the damages are directly linked to the DOT project. And I will admit that the further apart you get in time from a project, the harder it is for any plaintiff to prove damages, much like any case. So I think there is that outside statute of repose period in Wisconsin that we have to appreciate. But I don't think 88.872C was crafted in such a way, perhaps inartfully, to require that be done within 3 years of date of completion of the project, as a circuit court here found to be true. And so I want to address the Pruem case a little bit as well in relation to the Southport Court of Appeals decision, because if you put those two Court of Appeals decisions side by side, one, the Pruem case talks about first discovered no less than 3 times in its decision. Then we have a recent Southport Court of Appeals decision, which directly disavows but does not necessarily overrule Pruem. So we now almost have, in my view, an ambiguity in the interpretation of 88.87 and what the word occur means. And again, as our briefs have stated, we submit that occur in order to fit within the entire context of 88.87 under general rules of statutory construction. It must be viewed in relation to the sworn statement obligation that a property owner is required to file. And I will also talk about 32.18 briefly. I know the court had an oral argument on that case, on that issue, just a couple of days ago. 32.18 specifically identifies a finite point in time where that time period for a claim runs, which is the date of completion of the project. Here we have the nebulous occurrence. And what that means is not the same as 32.18. So we have argued that if the legislature wanted to put in a date of completion in 88.87.2C's requirements, they certainly would have had the ability to do that because they've done that in other statutes.
You read the Court of Appeals opinion, counsel, as saying that the finishing of the project in 2009 is necessarily the date that the damage occurred? I mean, couldn't it be, it seems that their point was whenever the damage occurred, and they take the 2009 date, I understand, but do you read their interpretation as foreclosing the possibility that you could have later developing damages, for example, slow developing wetlands?
Yes, I do, Your Honor, Justice Hagedorn. And that is where we believe that that was not the intent behind 88.87. Even the 1992 amendment or 1993 amendment, which came a year after Pruam, it only increased it from nine. The only significant change was to increase it from 90 day to a 3-year period to allow a property owner to learn. And I use the word learn because I take that word to mean the legislature intended to give the property owner an ability to discover the damages, not necessarily foreclose them off immediately, to create almost a 3-year statute of repose. This is a notice of claim statute, not a repose statute, which is triggered by an act occurring.
I read, and just want to offer an alternative reading, and you say that, but I read the Court of Appeals as saying that it's when the damage actually occurs. So let's suppose that, the construction project finished in 2009. And you have wetlands that solely develop. And let's say the wetlands on your property were all finished developing in 2012. I read the Court of Appeals opinion as saying, were those the underlying facts, you would have until 2015 to file it. Again, assuming, sub D doesn't apply and they didn't have actual knowledge or some other exception to it. Do you think that's fairly within what the Court of Appeals wrote?
No, it's not, Justice Hagedorn. The Court of Appeals did not get into that level of analysis or offer that alternative analysis for another property owner in the future to say, okay, I can understand it to mean this is what the date of occurrence was. And the Court of Appeals said, we agree the date of completion governs. A future litigant could look at that case and say, well, okay, the date of completion is X date, but how can I file a claim when I don't even know and I have to make it a sworn statement? To almost itemize my damages, much like an 89380 notice of claim.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Counsel, would you address the issue of forfeiture, please? By that, I mean, it is argued that you have forfeited the challenge to occurrence because you've relied in the circuit court and the Court of Appeals on the discovery interpretation of the statute found in the Pruam case. So if you could address forfeiture, please.
Sure. We did briefly discuss that in our reply brief, Justice Bradley. The circuit court, as we've contended all along, never issued a finding of fact. It simply said the damage obviously occurred the latest of 2009, not having any evidence or facts in its record to support that statement, which we believe is dicta. Furthermore, when we filed a petition in this court, the court issued the order granting the petition and said, we talked about this issue in our petition on when the damages occurred. And we asked the court, we talked about slow and invidious nature of wetlands. And when the court issued its order granting our petition, it specifically said issues other than issues not raised in the petition cannot be discussed in the Supreme Court. So we did raise it in our petition, Justice Bradley, and we did address it appropriately in the briefing here.
And when did you raise it in the circuit court or the Court of Appeals? That's my concern. Even though it may have been raised in the petition for review here, it seems to me antithetical to your approach to the case in the circuit court and the Court of Appeals to embrace occurrence. Antithetical in the sense that occurrence wasn't important to you. Discovery was important.
We have always contended that the discovery component is set forth under 88.87's interpretation under the Pruam case. But we did raise it in the Court of Appeals briefing as well. We talked briefly about asking the court to remand this to circuit court for findings on when the damages occurred, as well as on the slow and invidious nature of the wetlands. And we've always taken the position, no surprise to DOT, that there was no finding of fact. The fact that a circuit court judge stated, quote, the damage obviously occurred the latest of 2009, does not itself make it a finding of fact. It was dicta that the court was relying upon or stated in granting judgment on the pleadings. So it was briefly touched upon the Court of Appeals, Justice Bradley.
What do you do with this, counsel, that judgment of the pleadings really doesn't generally lend itself to the court making findings of fact unless the facts are stipulated or uncontested, because that's not what courts do generally. It's not a motion for summary judgment with affidavits. It's a motion for judgment on the pleading. How do you respond to that?
Yes, I can respond to that. And I respond to that by saying that judgment on the pleadings, the facts are taken to be true in favor of the plaintiff in order to grant, in this case, DOT's judgment. And we have, as I've stated before, we have never taken the position, we've never established with any affidavit or such when the damage occurred, such as the wetlands here. They could still be occurring. They could have occurred. They could have completed in 2012 or 13. And so based on 88.87, we did go ahead once our client knew, they did proceed to file the notice of claim. So I struggle with the judgment of the pleadings in a case such as this, which is so fact-driven, and the facts weren't developed to create a record on appeal. So we were stuck with a minimal record, such as it was, but that does not take away from our position that there is still a discovery component that needs to be addressed in light of the Pruem decision and now in light of the Court of Appeals Southport decision. There has to be some clarification, we ask, from this court to advise Wisconsin property owners what the meaning of occurrence is in this statute.
So, counsel, looking at your pleadings, then you're saying that it's enough that you pled that the damage occurred at some point within 3 years of your filing your complaint with DOT. That statement is enough to preserve the issue and it's not forfeited.
It would be almost like an inference, Justice Dallet. We would have to, like I said before, the 3 years of occurrence has been construed, occur means discovered. So under that standard, which was set forth in Pruem, we believe that our claim was timely and we were proceeding accordingly.
Right, but even if we did not agree with that reading and we thought occurred mean occurred, are you saying you've preserved the issue? It's not forfeited based on that statement in your pleading?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I also want to touch briefly on the purpose behind 88.87. I believe my time is up, so I don't want to speak.
Well, you don't have a red sign yet. It may be getting close.
Okay. I want to touch briefly on the general purpose here. This is a statute that was intended to allow property owners an ability to file a claim when their property has been damaged by a governmental entity. I'll finish my sentence real quickly.
That's fine. Go ahead.
It stands to reason that a property owner cannot file a claim without first knowing that they've been damaged to meet the sworn statement requirements of a claim. It's almost creating a catch-22, the statute itself. And so we do submit that under the purpose of giving property owners the ability to pursue claims and the right to pursue damages in the event of damage by a government entity under typical eminent domain laws, we submit that the discovery, the first discovered standard in Pruem should be upheld here.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Attorney Vander Musi, are you ready to proceed?
I am, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay.
Please. Good morning, and may it please the court. Jennifer Vandermeus on behalf of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. This case, at its core, is about respecting legislative intent and applying 88.87 sub 2C in accordance with its plain meaning. Under that paragraph, property owners who believe that a road project caused water damage to their land must file a claim within 3 years after the alleged damage occurred. By the plain language of the statute, the claims deadline runs from the date that the damage occurred, not from the date that the property owner discovered the damage. The Court of Appeals correctly held that the statute means what it says, and we ask that this court to affirm. So I'd like to start by turning to the language of the statute itself, which states in relevant part that any property owner damaged by the highway or railroad grade may, within 3 years after the alleged damage occurred, file a claim with the appropriate governmental agency.
When did this damage occur, counsel?
So the department, as it stated in its motion for judgment on the pleadings, their position is that based on paragraph 10 of the two pleadings of the complaint and the answer, the inference is that the damage in this case occurred when the project was completed, and there was no refutation of that assertion in the response to the motion for judgment.
So did the project cause the damage?
That has not been definitively determined. What was stated in the motion for judgment on the pleadings was a date of the damage's occurrence. And so because of that, the department moved for judgment on the pleadings.
My concern is this is a different kind of damage than we sometimes have from construction by DOT. And as you may know, we already had a case this week about DOT construction, and it's under a different statute. But paragraph 17 of the complaint clearly says that the construction caused the damage. And what you're telling me is that the pleadings somehow taken together, and there's no allegation except the damages occurred over a period of time in the complaint. So there's not a date set. I'm trying to figure out why you think the cause of the damage, and maybe you don't agree it was the cause of the damage, so that may be the problem. To me, it seems like you're conflating the cause of the damage with the occurrence of the damage.
Yeah.
That's
what
you're wondering me. If you could maybe try to address that.
Sure. So in a motion for judgment on the pleadings, we're looking at the pleadings themselves and what's pled there. So to the extent that Southport pled that the damage was caused by the department's construction project, I mean, that may have been something that the department certainly doesn't concede as a factual matter. But since we were in the universe of judgment on the pleadings, I'd like to set that aside, because what's important here is that we move for judgment on the pleadings based on the fact that this claim was not timely, because based on the pleadings and focusing on paragraph 10, the date that the damage occurred was at the latest 2009, and that's what the circuit court accepted based on the arguments presented below.
There's nothing in the complaint that says the damage occurred on that date. Nothing. I read the complaint a long time ago when I started on this case. I just read it again this morning. It just doesn't say that.
That's correct.
It talks about paragraph 10, during approximately 2008 and 2009, DOT proceeded with a construction project, and that's the one that we're all talking about here. But there's nothing there that says the damage occurred on that day.
We agree that the pleadings do not explicitly state the damage occurred on that day. But what we need to do is take what was pled in addition to what was argued below. And what the department argued was based on that paragraph, the inference is that the damage occurred in 2009 at the latest.
That is what you argued. But this is judgment on the pleadings. And the other side argued specifically below. And then this morning they were questioned about what they said at the Court of Appeals, and below they said, we don't know when the damage occurred. We want to flesh that out through discovery. I mean, that's in the argument. It is not in the pleadings. In the pleadings, they've just said it occurred over a period of time.
Yeah, so in response to the department's motion for judgment on the pleadings, the Southport Commons responded with a legal argument that occurred should be read to mean discovered, relying on the Perum decision.
I agree with that, but that's not the only thing they said. I mean, I have the transcript, which I read again this morning, okay? And they said they don't know, okay? And the process of determining exactly when this damage occurred and when they should value the property, that was an unknown. I mean, that's what they argued to the circuit court. I'm looking at the transcript.
So the circuit court, they may have said that in the circuit court, but the circuit court determined based on the department's argument that the damage occurred in 2009 at the latest. And then we moved to the Court of Appeals, and there was no argument in front of the Court of Appeals that the circuit court's determination was erroneous. And as a result of that, there was no development of any argument as to whether that should be an error that should go back, that we should go back and develop facts on. And now here we are in 2021, 11 years after this damage, after this project was completed, and to go back now would be prejudicial to the department, but also just not something that was adequately developed in the lower courts. And we would maintain that based on the pleadings and the arguments presented below, we had a concession that the occurrence was at 2009 in the latest when the damage, when the project was completed.
What I'm hearing from opposing counsel is that in order to file a notice of claim under the relevant statute here, there has to be a verified complaint. You have to say it under oath. How can you say the date on which you were damaged under oath if you don't know?
So the legislature had this, I think, in mind, and you know, we haven't talked about 1993 Wisconsin Act 456 yet, but the legislature wanted to give the property owners enough time to discover the damage. That's just explicitly stated in that legislative committee note.
And right, so, I saw that, yeah.
So that would enable a property owner to, in a rare situation, so just based on case law, I think we know that typically the statute is covering situations where there's some very obvious damage, and it may or may not be attributable to a construction project. It could be that something is constructed and then there's a heavy rainstorm a year or so later that causes flooding. This wetland issue, I don't see it happening often, but that's another scenario. So I think that the legislature was concerned about situations that we have here where the date of the damage and the date of discovery may not be the same. So they gave an additional, on top of the 90 days, they moved it to 3 years to give property owners time to discover the damage.
Well, there's also 2D, which I look at, which says if you fail to give the notice within the requisite period of time and the DOT had knowledge of the problem and they're not prejudiced thereby, then we don't even worry about the 3-year notice, right?
Right. That is correct. 2D was added in that 1993 Act, and it gives an exception saying that the action on the claim is not barred if the government had notice and it's not prejudicial. Now, we don't have any claim or allegation of that provision applying in this case, but that is something that the legislature has built into this particular statute to provide an exception for when this claims deadline in sub C needs to be met. So,
how can we interpret the statute if we don't know when the damage has occurred? How can we, because it says when the damage occurred, how can we interpret the statute if we don't know that date?
So I want to just state again that it's our position that there was a determination and a concession that the damage occurred in 2009 in this case. But
there wasn't a concession, counsel. You may say there's a determination, but I've read the record and there wasn't a concession.
Oh, fair enough, Your Honor. But in terms of reading when the damage occurs under the statute, it may in some situations require factual development or a factual determination. Sometimes, as in the Pruem decision, there's a heavy rainstorm and somebody will show up at a town meeting and talk about it, and there may be an easy way to determine when the damage occurred. There may also be situations where the damage happens more slowly and over time, and perhaps that would be a situation where people need to get experts in to testify as to when the damage occurred. That wasn't necessary in this case, but it could happen. So there are ways to interpret occurred and in the way that the legislature intended that sometimes may need a factual development or factual determinations.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel, suppose the complaint had stated that upon information and belief, the construction project led to the slow development of wetlands up through and continuing until 2015. Would that have been sufficient to survive a judgment on the pleadings?
Up until 2015, meaning.
So they filed their complaint in 2017, and they're essentially arguing that this change in wetlands happened slowly over the course of 6 years, brings the, at least a portion of the dam, a portion of the alleged damages within the 3 year time period, maybe. Would that have been a sufficient allegation in their pleading to survive a judgment on the pleadings?
It certainly would have been a lot closer if there would have been some allegation that the damage occurred within the 3 year period. There may have been a different motion brought then at that point as to determine the date of occurrence. Right here, we had statements based on the face of the pleadings.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm just trying to figure out here. So, right. So that, I'm trying to construct a hypothetical. Maybe I'm not doing a good job of it, but assuming that they had alleged that these additional wetlands developed and were continuing to develop until 2015, within the 3 year period of the time they filed their notice of claim.
So if they would have alleged that the wetlands developed, so I think that the project was in 2009. So if they would have alleged that the wetlands developed in 2011, within the 3 year period, and then filed their lawsuit later, I just want to make sure it's clear that the 88.87 doesn't contain a statute of limitations. About when you can bring your lawsuit in circuit court. It talks about when you need to file your claim with the government agency. And so that would be within 3 years of when the alleged damage occurred. So if we had the construction project completed in 2009, and then an allegation in the complaint that the wetland damage developed starting in 2011 through 2015, perhaps facially on the complaint, that would have been enough to survive judgment on the pleadings. However, the department may have at that point said, you know, we disagree that that's when the damage occurred. We think that it happened a different time. There may have been a summary judgment motion filed later on that. But so just to make sure it's clear, there's no deadline specifically in the statute about when you bring your lawsuit in circuit court or it's focused on the claims deadline.
Right. And your argument is they didn't plead that. And maybe if there could be a reasonable inference that they did, they certainly didn't argue it.
Yes. Thank you. So going back to just talking about the interpretation of the statute, we really think that it's important to just focus on the statute's plain language. You don't need to go further than that. Contextually, reading occurred as meaning occurred makes sense because within 3 years after the damage occurs or takes place, the property owner files a claim that describes the faulty construction and a description of the lands alleged to have been damaged by flooding or water soaking. Now, as we've said, and I think as Justice Dallet was pointing out in some of her questions, this three-year window really gives property owners ample time to identify the damage and notify the government agency, regardless of whether it was an obvious event or whether it was an event that may have been happening more slowly. But it further enables the government agency, if appropriate, to promptly correct the cause of the damage or acquire the rights to use the land for drainage or overflow purposes or deny the claim, which would pave the way for filing an inverse condemnation action or other actions specifically described in that statute. So in short, the plain language interpretation of occurred is consistent with the purposes of the statute because it encourages prompt action, leads with a desire for the government to correct the problem if it can, which would protect property owners' rights, and then also helps the government to correct the cause of the damage before so much time has passed that it's not possible to identify the cause or correct the cause of the damage in a cost-effective manner. Now, surrounding subsections also support this interpretation of occurred. For example, under 88.87 sub 2 paragraph B, the public authority may purchase drainage rights and easements to aid in the prevention of damage to property owners, which might otherwise occur as a result of failing to comply with paragraph A. Occur in this subsection is most naturally read as to happen or take place. Public authorities may aid in the prevention of damage that may otherwise happen as a result of a failure to comply with the duties in paragraph A. When the legislature uses the same words in the same statute, they're presumed to mean the same thing, absent textual or structural clues to the contrary. Occurred, as it's read in this statute, means to happen or take place. So because the statute's plain and unambiguous, this court need not go further. But as I've already touched on, if there was any doubt, 1993 Wisconsin Act 456 and the legislative committee notes within there resolve any doubt, because the legislature said that they added the claims deadline to create a three-year deadline to give property owners sufficient time to discover the damage.
So, counsel, even if we accept the state's construction of the statute that occurrence means when something took place that damaged the property and not when it was discovered, I mean, it goes back to the crux of the issue, as I think the Chief Justice laid out. How do we know when the damage occurred? You state in your brief at page 27 that given that Southport owns the land, there was nothing preventing it from discovering any damage caused by the road construction project earlier. But we don't know in this case because Southport didn't have its day in court. It didn't have a trial. It didn't have the opportunity to go through discovery and develop the facts and determine when the damage occurred. I'm not sure how we can apply the statute as you construe it to the facts and the record that we have in this case.
So it's possible that in response to the department's motion for judgment on the pleadings, that Southport could have argued that there was a fact issue or a fact dispute as to when the damage occurred, and they wanted to prove that up and have their day in court, but they didn't do that. They responded with a legal argument. So in other cases, there may be a need to establish factually when alleged damage occurs in order to know when this, whether this claims deadline was met or not. Here, that is not what transpired below, but there may be situations where we need factual development on that issue. So compliance with the time limit in Wisconsin Statute 88.87 sub 2 paragraph C is a mandatory condition precedent to filing a claim. That's the Van v. Town of Manitowoc Rapids case, which was decided before 1993 Wisconsin Act 456, but I would note that the legislative committee note did reference that decision. The statute does include an exception to the rule here, which is when the government had actual notice of the claim within 3 years. That's sub D, which we've also briefly touched on today. In circuit court, Southport did not contend that there was a factual dispute. It argued that incurred should be interpreted to mean discovered. And because of that, both the circuit court and the Court of Appeals concluded, as the department argued, that the damage occurred in 2009 when the project was completed. It's undisputed that the notice of claim was filed in 2017. Based on the pleadings and the arguments presented in this case, and based on a correct interpretation of the statute, we think that this court should affirm the Court of Appeals. Before I conclude, though, I'd like to address a couple of things. First, I'd like to talk a little bit about Pruem. As we've explained in our briefs, it's our position that Pruem is not controlling because the question presented in that case was materially different. In other words, the court did not intentionally take up or decide the issue of whether occurred should be interpreted to mean discovered. Rather, the court was considering whether at the time the 90-day clock continues to run each day that the damage continues. In analyzing that and another issue in the case involving preemption, the court grouped the words occurred and discovered together, perhaps a little imprecisely. And we do not think that that language, because of the issues and the fact scenario in that case, is controlling. And we would ask for a decision today that the Pruem case has no precedential value in terms of interpreting correctly the word occurred. Alternatively, if the court were to construe Pruem as a holding that controls here, we would ask for that to be overruled, just that narrow holding. It's erroneous interpretation of the statute because it's objectively wrong. I also would like to just respond to an argument I heard presented by the petitioner. And we said this in our brief as well. It's not, the department disagrees that the Court of Appeals held that occurred means the date of project completion. The court held, based on the arguments presented in the case, that, let me step back. The court held that occurred means occurred. Based on the arguments presented in the case, applying occurred to this case, occurred meant the date the project was completed. So that's a distinction we think is important. We also think, as we said before, that remand is not appropriate here under any circumstances, because the argument of the when the damage occurred here was forfeited, and now we're 11 years later after this project was completed. It will be very difficult to go back on remand and establish the date the damages occurred, the cause of the damage. This is just something that could have been raised below. It was not. And we would ask for all of these reasons for this court to affirm the Court of Appeals. And if there are no other questions, then I am happy to cede the rest of my time.
Okay. Any further questions from the court? Okay. Attorney Markowitz, are you ready to do rebuttal? Now, you're still muted. You got to take your turn your mic on. Okay, go ahead now.
Thank you very much. May it please the court, Alan Markowitz. This is not my first argument to the Supreme Court. And I will attempt to stay within the 5-minute time limitation. And in order to do so, I really would like to view this not from 2,000 feet, but perhaps from 50,000 feet. The legislature has responded on two separate occasions over the years to pleas by property owners for protection under certain circumstances where they would otherwise be denied the right to pursue damages. One is the change of grade statute, which the court is very familiar with in 3218, and the other is 8887. There are some very significant differences in those two statutes. When you look at 3218 and it talks about change of grade, you have an open, obvious situation that is visible even during the construction work itself. You don't have to wait until the project is completed before you understand that the change of grade is causing damage to property. So the legislature addressed that issue saying, in effect, look, it's open, it's obvious, you can tell whether your property has been damaged in some way by the change of grade, even though there's been no taking from the property. And therefore, we're going to give you 90 days from the time the project is completed within which to assert your position. Then the legislature took a look at another situation. And the preamble or the early words in 8887 make it very clear that the legislature intended to protect property owners when a public project would cause damage to their property by diversion of water. Yes, it's true that in some cases that's going to be open and obvious. If we're dealing with a stream that's flowing on the surface that's suddenly diverted from going in one direction to another direction and invades the farmer's field or the open field, that's going to be open and obvious. But in the creation of wetlands, and the record clearly indicates here that this was a property in which wetlands had been determined earlier, before the project. So the property owner knew that there were wetlands on the property. So this is not a case where you would have a pristine piece of property and suddenly there would be the appearance of wetlands. What the wetland pleading indicated, or the pleadings indicated about the wetlands, that they had increased. They had increased in size, they had increased in volume, and they had caused damage to the property in an invidious way at an undetermined time. All the property owner could say is, we discovered that. The first time we had an opportunity to discover it and discovered it, it took experts to tell us, no, your wetland situation has changed. And we've alleged that that was caused by the project. Yes, it's true. We do not know when it began. We don't even know when it ended. the process of increasing the wetlands on this property could be an ongoing situation that could eventually totally destroy any value whatsoever on this piece of property by making it totally unusable for any purpose whatsoever. What is a property owner to do under those circumstances? Property owner discovers the situation, calls it to the attention of counsel, counsel files a claim, and proceeds. In this case, the circuit court simply looked at the situation and said, well, it's my position that this project completion date had to be the date when the damage occurred, and therefore you didn't file within 3 years of that. It's also unreasonable for the legislature or the Department of Transportation to say to a property owner, you know, every time we work on a project that's near your property, your obligation as a property owner is to test your property on a regular periodic basis, at least once a year, at least within a reasonable period of time, to make sure that nothing secretive has happened to your property. In this case, we feel we're speaking not only for Southport, but we're speaking for property owners in this state who find themselves dealing with a public project on their door.
Also, it has been alleged and argued by DOT that you conceded the issue about when the damage occurred in this case because you didn't present it to the circuit court and you didn't present it to the Court of Appeals. Would you please address that?
First, we never conceded it to anyone. We don't know when it occurred. All we know is that because it was discovered in 2016, it's reasonable to conclude that it occurred within a reasonable time before that. And that it was continuing to occur right up until the time it was discovered. And we believe it's continued to occur since then. But we're looking at the claim that was filed in 2017.
I understand that. And your time is up, but I need you to answer the question that I posed, which was, did you concede that the damage occurred at some specific date, or did you fail to argue that you didn't know when the damage occurred in the circuit court or in the Court of Appeals?
We did not know what the circuit court position was until the circuit court issued a decision, and that's the very first time that assumption was presented to us that it had to have occurred when the project was completed. The issue didn't come up before that. The issue doesn't come up in pleadings. The circuit court could have said, I'm concerned about this particular issue, and I'm not going to rule on a motion on the pleadings. If either party wants to submit a motion for summary judgment, you can go ahead and do so, and I'll deal with it. Or we will wait for discovery and trial to determine the issues of this particular case. All a property owner can do under these circumstances is when they first learn that they've been damaged, which is when this is discovered, they file a timely claim and put the department on notice.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, counsel. And thank you very much for the time. Okay. Very good. Well, thank you all for another interesting case on real property. It's amazing to have two in 1 week, but they're both well presented. And I appreciate your participating with us in this Zoom mode. Hopefully soon we'll be all beyond this and back to regular old oral arguments. But your briefs were very helpful and the arguments helpful as well. We will now conclude, and Justice Hagedorn will meet with the students to continue his discussion of matters before the court.